Now we're holding at the bottom of page Gimel in Bava Kamma, a couple of lines into Os Daled. A couple of lines into Os Daled, bottom of page Gimel. Page Gimel in Bava Kamma. Okay, we were learning about where Chizkiyahu was buried. We said he was buried b'male kivrei b'nei David, which the Gemara explained b'male means b'me'ula, means in the highest quality area of the area where they buried the kings of Yehuda, namely next to David and Shlomo. And we talked about last time a couple of reasons why he got that honor. So now continuing on that then, the pasuk goes on to say, the pasuk had said, v'chavod asu lo b'moses. We started learning last time that the kavod that they did for him when he passed away is, we said, they set up a yeshiva by his grave. And we talked about, was that literally by his grave? Is there a problem maybe of lo yag l'rosh? Is it different because maybe they're learning his chidushei Torah, or they're talking in his kavod, and so on and so forth. In any case, so now continuing with another drasha on that pasuk, Tana Rabbanan, v'chavod asu lo b'moses, when the pasuk says they did honor for him when he passed away, ze chizkia melech Yehuda. So this refers to chizkia. Now Rashi says there's no reason for the Gemara to say that. The pasuk is in connection with chizkia. There's no reason to say ze chizkia melech Yehuda, but that's just the style of the Gemara. Anyway, so this refers to Chizkiyah. A couple of them, Mefarshim, talk about reasons why the Gemara might use that phrasing, but whatever. The point is, it refers to Chizkiyah. She yotzu l'fon of lamed vav elef chalutzei kosef. When he, by his levaya, 36,000 people went out with their shoulders uncovered. You find Rashi explained they did kriya, and their shoulders were bare. We find in the Gemara in Moed Katan and various other places, it talks about that was the minhag in those times. Here Rashi is saying it's because they tore their clothing. From other places, it seems that the idea would be that they'd actually take their arms out of their sleeves. And the Gemara talks about there's a certain amount. There's what a person does for other relatives versus parents versus his rebbe and versus for a nasi, etc. So they went out with their shoulders bared in mourning. 36,000 people. So that's the covered that they did for him. So that's the thing. Rashi says shekodu bigdeim. They tore their clothing and shemiru kisfeim until their shoulders were visible. From other Gemaras, it seems, and this is how the Rambam brings it in Hilchas Avil, it seems that it's more that they would take their arms out of their sleeves, and they'd wear that instead of the neck hole being around their neck as it usually would, it would be further down on their body. So that's the thing. So the Rambam, for example, brings in Hilchas Avil that for Nasi, I think, or whatever it is, they have to bare both shoulders. So here, Chizkiyah being a king, then it would have been like that as well. So 36,000 people. Divir of Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Where does he get 36,000? Tosfos points out, since the pasuk says, v'chavod asu loy, b'moisoy, loy is gematria with 36, lamed vav. So we're not going to say it was just 36 people, that wouldn't be much of a covered. Therefore, we understand it to be 36,000. So divir of Yehuda. Omelet of Nehemiah, but Rabbi Nehemiah says, what's the big deal? V'ale gam lefnei Achav also came. They did the same thing for Achav. They made a big hesped when he was killed as well. Tosfos points out, now, the tzaddikim were very happy when Achav was killed, because now they're finally rid of him, he was a big rasha. But nevertheless, still, there were his servants and the people who liked him, who made a big hesped for him, so much so that you have a pasuk in Zechariah that refers, according to Targum Yonah, and over there, the Gemara quotes in a couple of places, refers to his hesped as one of the biggest ones in history. So, Kemisped Hadad Rimon Bevikas Megiddon, and Targum Yonasan over there translates, Kemisped Hadad Rimon refers to the tremendous mourning that they made for Achav, who was killed by Hadad Rimon, another name for Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram. Anyway, the point is, so we see that was done for Achav as well. So what's the big deal that it was done for Chizkiyah? Now, why mention specifically Achav? So that's the thing. Tosfos says it's not like it was specific for Achav, but the point is, we do find that Achav's hesped is used as an example in Jewish history of a tremendous hesped, and therefore we would assume the same kind of thing with that huge number of people took place over there as well. Ion Yaakov points out another way the Gemara might mean, is look, Achav was one of the worst of all the kings. He's one of the ones, Ein Lam Chelek L'Olam Haba. So then, and nevertheless, it was done for him. So then what's the greatness if they did the same thing for Chizkiah? So Ella, rather than Nehemiah says, the special cover that they did for Chizkiah, she nichuloi sefer Torah mitosei. They placed the sefer Torah on his mita, on his beard, that they're carrying his body on. Tosfos points out that elsewhere, the Gemara says, that you're not supposed to do that. The same way as you can't. The Gemara mentions over there that they wanted to do that when Rav Huna passed away, and they didn't do that because they said Rav Huna had said the din when he's alive. You're not allowed to sit on the same bench or chair or whatever where Sefer Torah is on, so it wouldn't be right after he passed away to do that with his mitzvah. Here, on the other hand, Tosfos says, because Chizkiah was so tremendously great in Torah, Mais and Tovim, so therefore the Nehemiah says they went and did that. Va'amru, and they said, Kiyam zeh mashakasa bazeh. This one, Chizkiah, fulfilled what it says in this, in the Sefer Torah. So that was the special cover they did for him, says Nehemiah. So the Gemara asks, Va'in nami avdin and hachi. Fine, but nowadays we do the same kind of thing. So in that case, then what's the specialty of Chizkiah? And that we put a Sefer Torah on the mitzvah. Apparently, in the times of the Gemara, they didn't do it for Rav Huna, we said, because Rav Huna himself was Morad the Shmaita. He's the one who said the din, that you don't sit on a mitzvah to Sefer Torah monochalea, but apparently for other Chachmei Yisrael in that time, they did. The answer is, apuki machkinen, we don't. We take out a Sefer Torah by the Levaya, but we don't, anuchi lemanchinen, but we don't actually put it on the mitzvah, because then, like, you have that issue that you shouldn't lie on a bed where the Sefer Torah is. The boy same anuchi nami manchinen, another way you could look at it, maybe indeed we do place it on the bed as well. However, kiyam lo yamrinan, however, to make this announcement, like they did by Chizkiah, he fulfilled what it says in this Torah. That kind of announcement we don't make by a tzaddik's levaya. So there's still some degree of special covered that they did for Chizkiah. So the Gemara continues in this connection, which is a short story, which is going to bring us to another answer. Omer Rav Babachona, Hava Azilna Ba'adeh de Rav Yochanan L'Mishol Shmaita. One time I was walking behind Rav Yochanan to ask him about teachings in Torah. Shmaita is when you have, throughout Shas, you have something that a Chacham heard from his Rebbe and tells over, Omer Rav Yochanan, Omer whatever, then that's a Shmaita. So Rabbi Yochanan taught such things in his Mesnedrish, and now Rabbi Baba Chana, one of his Talmidim, is following behind Rabbi Yochanan to ask him about these things. Now, if in the middle Rabbi Yochanan had to go to the bathroom, if I had asked him something, so one time he had to go to the bathroom. I'd asked him something in Torah, like Poshit Lon, but he didn't answer me. Ad Moshe Yode, not just after he, obviously, he wouldn't give the answer in the bathroom itself, but even after he came out, until he washed his hands, Umanach Tfilin, and until he put back on his Tfilin, because they wore Tfilin all day long then, Umavorich, and he said the Bracha, most of the Mephoshim seem to understand the Bracha means the Bracha on Tfilin, and the idea would be, Alderach like we have, when you take off your talus on Yom Kippur afternoon, you have Hesach Hadas, you're not planning to put it back on for a while, the same way, you can't wear Tfilin in the bathroom, so taking them off would be a Hesach Hadas, and you have to make another Bracha. Yes, I mean, I think the Malbim brings in one of his Sforim that it may have been the Bracha Asher Yotzeh. Whatever the case, V'hodor Omalon, and then Rabbi Yochanan gave us the following answer. In answer to this question, what's special about Chizkiah compared to everybody else? What do they do special for him? So he says, Afilu kiyam amrinan. Another possible answer, maybe even by the levayas of other great Talmidei Chachamim, we do say that he fulfilled everything that it does in the Torah. So maybe we do bring out a Sefer Torah, and we do even put it on his mitzvah, and we do even make that announcement. However, limit lo yamrinan. But we don't announce that he taught Torah, that he taught everything that's in here. Whereas by Chizkiah's levaya, they did. So the Gemara asks, so you're telling me then that limit is greater than kiyam? Va'omamar, don't we learn in a braisa? We learned this in Kedushin. Gadol Talmud, Shat Talmud, Shalimud, maybe the day maisa. Learning is great because it brings to maisa. So Rashi explains, the point of the question is that maisa therefore is greater. So then on the face of it should be a greater thing to say kiyam than to say limud. Why are we saying that kiyam we can say for any great Talmud Chacham? But limud was a one-time thing in history that they did for Chizkiah. It seems the other way around. And the answer is, like Kasha, halamigmar halagmuri. There's a difference between learning Torah versus teaching it to others. So to learn for oneself, their maisa is greater. But because it's maybe the day maisa, but to teach other people is greater than maisa. So therefore, limud that he taught it to others is a unique compliment that they paid only to Chizkiah, and we don't do to others. Now that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos has a problem with that explanation of Rashi, because this expression, Gadol Talmud, Shah Talmud Mevi L'Dei Maisa, in that Gemara and Kiddushin, we learned this a few weeks ago, that actually, the Fakir, the context there is the other way around. They ask the Chachamim, what's greater, Talmud Gadol or Maisa Gadol? And the answer was, eventually they decided, Talmud Gadol, Shah Talmud Mevi L'Dei Maisa. So there it comes out from there the other way around, that learning is greater than Maisa. So what are you telling me, Rashi, that it comes out from that? It tells us that Maisa is greater from that Gemara. It comes out that they decided that learning is greater. So Tosfos gives a couple of explanations over here. If we're saying Kiyim, since Talmud maybe the day Meiser, if he was Mekayim, all the mitzvahs, necessarily he had to have learned them. Because, yeah, Talmud maybe the day Meiser, if he didn't learn, al derech, like Loyam Aretz Chosid, he won't possibly have been able to be Mekayim, all the mitzvahs. So now the question would be, why are we saying Kiyim? Why are we not saying Limud, whereby we assume that Limud means he learned? So why not? He would have had to learn in order to be Mekayim. And the answer is Limud doesn't just mean he learned, it means he taught. And that's something that's different, that has nothing to do with Talmud Gadol or Maisa Gadol. Or Fakert, actually, we would say, similar to Rashi, Tosfos says, because limit is even greater, because limud, when you're teaching other people, that not only makes lomad, would be that he himself now is able to do maisa. Limit is now that he's causing other people to do maisa, which is even greater, so that's a unique kind of thing that they did only for Chizkiah. Then Tosfos brings a girsa from Shiltis that Shiltis, the Rabachoy Goin, is one of the earliest Sforim from after the times of the Gemara. It's written by Rabachoy Goin. It's kind of a digest of the Gemara. He takes pieces of the Gemara and intersperses them with Agadta and with questions and discussions of matters in Halacha. So he quotes considerable parts of the Gemara in his Sefer. So they bring over there a Girsa as follows. The story that Rabbi Baba Chana said was, without the whole part of Kiyam Amrinan, Limud Layamrinan, is just that Rabbi Baba Chana said, when Rabbi Yochanan had to go to the bathroom, he wouldn't talk with us in Torah until he had put back on his tefillin and said the bracha. So now, from that alone, it seems that Maisa is greater. Because we're saying you have to do the Maisa of putting on tefillin before he's going to teach them Torah. And the answer is, when it comes to learning himself Talmud Gadol, but to teach others is not as great as Maisa, so Fakir, the opposite of Tosfos' previous answer is that teaching them is greater. Now, according to Shiltis, it gives the Fakir. Teaching them is not as great as his own Maisa and Mitzvahs, therefore we had to make sure to put back on his tefillin, so he's not missing any more, an extra moment of wearing tefillin, and then he could teach them, and then he could give them an answer to this, and then he could give them an answer to this question. To whatever question they had asked him. Various Mephoshim talk about more details in this. There may be a difference, for example, between what a person starts out with, a person has to start out learning, because again, Loyam Aretz Chosid. But later on, eventually, once he's learned and he knows what the halachas are, then for him to continue learning is not as great as Maisa, but for him to teach others is going to be greater than Maisa. And there's a variety of other answers as well of how to end for these things. So now we're saying limud,
and then Maisa.
So we're saying that limud, so we're saying Lamad himself to learn at the beginning is greater than Maisa, because Talmud Gadol should maybe lead in Maisa. But later on, eventually, once he's eventually graduated beyond that, then Maisa Gadol. But to teach others is still greater even than that. And that would be why the Gemara is saying over here, limud loyamrinan, kiyamrinan, limud loyamrinan. So that would be why by Chizkiah, uniquely, they said limud, whereas we don't do that by anybody else. There are Maimonides Chassidus that talk about that we find that this distinction between Talmud Gadol and Maisa Gadol is actually reflected in the first two parashiyos of Shema. In the first parasha of Shema, we're focusing more on learning Torah, v'shinantam levanecha v'dibarta bam, and then, by the way, you have tefillin and mezuzah. Whereas in the second parasha, the focus is much more on the Maisa mitzvahs, and only afterwards you have and then you have l'mad to Maisa v'smenechem. So therefore, you have this distinction within Shema itself, whether Talmud Gadol or Maisa Gadol, and explains in these various Maimorim that There's a difference between nowadays and La'asid Lavi. Nowadays, Talmud Gadol, La'asid Lavi, we're going to see the greatness of Maisa Gadol because we're going to see the greatness of how Maisa makes a Dida B'tachton, of how it created the Dida B'tachtonim, which is going to be Nisgala fully La'asid Lavi. Here we had recently in Tanya, we had Altadeva spent along the whole Geras Chof talking about the greatness of mitzvah, half of the Geras Chof talking about the greatness of mitzvah's Maisius. That the gashmius of the world reflects much more than anything else, the koyach of the Eivishtim much more than the ruchniastika worlds, and so on and so forth. And in that sense, then, so La'asid Lavi, we'll see the greatness of Maisa Gadol that we don't see so much nowadays.
Even now, it's greater, just we don't feel it.
But. So yeah, that's the point. In other words, nowadays we focus on Talmud Gadol, but La'asid Lavi, we'll see openly how Maisa Gadol, yeah. Continuing on this topic of Talmud and Maisa, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Yochai." This is also going to connect with the theme of most of the perek. After all, has been the nizokim of a shur. So now let's finish off the perek by talking about the positive side of what a shur accomplishes. "Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Yochai." My dichtiv. What does it mean? A pasuk in Yeshaya. Ashreichem zorei al kol mayim. Fortunate are you who plant by all the waters. Meshalchei regel asher v'achamer, who let loose the foot of the ox and of the donkey. So what does that refer to? In Parshat Pshat, it means something like where, in other words, they have they're growing their crops so plentifully that even they can afford to let their oxen and their oxen and donkeys run around freely and eat from the plants because they have plenty more where that came from. But what does it really mean? The Gemara says, "Kol ha'osek b'Torah v'gmulas chasadim," a person who is involved with Torah and with gmulas chasadim, zoche l'nachlas shnei shvatim. We're going to see how zorei al komayim refers to Torah and gmulas chasadim, zoche l'nachlas shnei shvatim. He will be zoche to inherit the brachas of two of the shvatim. First of all, shenemar ashreichem zorei. So what does Zore mean? In Zriya, la tzedakah. Planting refers to tzedakah. Shenema ziru lacham la tzedakah, v'kitzu lefi chesed. As the pasuk says, plant for yourself tzedakah and harvest according to chesed. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains in Baba Basra, what that means is that as much tzedakah as you give, the real harvest, the real schar for it, is the chesed that goes into it. We have famously the Rambam writes, you have the different levels of giving tzedakah, which involve varying amounts of chesed, so the real reward is proportional to the chesed that went into that tzedakah. The Alter Rebbe talks about in a number of places in the Geras HaKodesh and Tanya, how tzedakah is compared to planting in the sense that we plant seeds in the Olam HaSel Yonim, and those result, and then those grow crops of bounty, of Shefa Melamayla, for the person, so therefore the tzedakah is compared to planting. The in mayim ela Torah, and water refers only to Torah, shenema hoy kol tzamei l'chol amayim, as the Navi says, hey, everyone who's thirsty, go to the water, which means the Torah is available for you to learn. You're thirsty for other course, go learn Torah.
Doesn't cost any money either,
as he goes on to say, l'chol shibu v'echolu, b'lai kesef v'lai mechir, yeah. So in other words, v'dashening hashreichem zorei al komayim means you're planting tzedakah and you're on all the waters, namely that you're learning Torah. So when you do those two things, and Eitz Yosef in fact says the connection between them is also meaning that he does tzedakah according to what the Torah says. Again, for example, he does one of the higher possible levels of tzedakah, for example, to bring the tzedakah to the recipient's house, like, for example, the way Marukva did, such that the recipient doesn't know who gave it to him and avoids the embarrassment, which is that Rambam lists that as the third highest level of tzedakah. So, Bushka would be better in the sense that then you don't know who you're giving to and the person doesn't know who you received from. Yeah. On the other hand, the Rambam points out, based on a Gemara, based on the relevant Gemara in Ksubas, that works only if the administrators of the Tzedakah Fund are very honest. If they're not, then better don't do that. Apparently, for example, Ma'okva, the reason why you had to go putting four zuz by people's doors is because you couldn't trust the Gabar Tzedakah of that time, apparently. In any case, the point is, so when we're saying over here that kol ha'osek b'Torah v'gmulas chasadim means that he does gmulas chasadim in the way that the Torah says to do. So now, what does it mean, zoich l'nachla shnei shvatim? What two shvatim's nachla does he inherit? Zoich l'kila p'Yosef, he's zoicha to a canopy like Yosef, a canopy representing kavod, representing children, like you have the chuppah, which leads to eventually having children. Ben Poras Yosef Gomer, as in Yaakov's bracha to him, Yosef is a fruitful son. Bonos Tzada, are they sure the girls walked along the wall? As Rashi mentions over there on the pasuk, one meaning is that the Mitzri girls were walking along over there to gaze at Yosef when he's going and traveling around Mitzrayim when he was just appointed as viceroy. So we see therefore that now he has this kila, he has this honor. He has this honor, like they were honoring him to look at him. The Medrash said they were throwing jewelry at him and so forth. And Maharsha says it also means, in the sense, Ben Poras Yosef also refers to that his children. We find, in fact, Yosef himself did tremendous gemilas chasadim. He supported his brothers, he supported his whole family for years in the Tzrayim, and they eventually vayifru vayubu ma'od. And Yosef himself actually had, by the time we come to the second census in Parshas Pinchas, Yosef's descendants were larger than any other sheva. The first time around, you have Ephraim and Manasseh were each medium size. Manasseh was small, Ephraim was a little larger. By the time you come to the second census, Manasseh grew tremendously. Ephraim was also decent size. Between the two of them, they were larger even than Shevet Yehuda, which is otherwise the biggest Shevet in both censuses. So Yosef was Zoicha to have many children in the schus of the tzedakah and gemilas chasadim that he did, and the fact that he made it that his brothers are able to learn Torah. So that's what we're saying. So now a person who does similarly is also zoicha to a kila, to a chuppah, which leads to many children and descendants like Yosef.
He
supported the whole world, but yeah, he supported in particular his family. Furthermore. And he's also zoicha to the inheritance of Yisachar. So that's what we're saying. Meshalchei regel asher v'achamur. Yosef is compared to asher. V'chol shorei hodoloi. And Yisachar is compared to a donkey. Yisachar d'chtid. Yisachar chamur gorem. As the pasuk says, Yisachar is a strong-boned donkey. Namely, that he has... And then Rashi brings from Targum that it means he's rich in possessions. So therefore, so now, retranslating the pasuk, Ashreichem, fortunate are you, Zorei, where you plant tzedakah, Al Kol Mayim, with all the water of Torah, Meshalchei Regel, Asher, you'll now be able to let loose the foot of the ox, which is Yosef's bracha, V'achamur, and the donkey, Yisachar's bracha. So that's one version. The Ikadamri, Oivav Nofel, Lefonav Ki Yosef, another version of the bracha that such a person is going to get is that on the one hand, his enemies will fall before him. He'll be able to easily defeat his enemies, like Yosef. As we find in Moshe's bracha to Yosef in this week's parasha, we have that he'll with his horns he will gore the nations to the ends of the earth. At the beginning of the parak, a couple of days ago, we had the Gemara had brought that as a proof that the word yinagach, one of the proofs that the word yinagach means to gore with the horns, to push with the horns. So here the idea is, so Maharsha says, in other words, the vote is that we actually find with Yoshua, who was descended from Yosef, that there were a couple of times where instead, a couple of times during the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, when instead of having to go and fight in detail against every king and every nation individually, a bunch of them formed a coalition and went to fight the Jewish people, and Yeshua was able to finish them all off in one blow. So that's what we're saying over here. Yachdom, that Hashem makes them gather all together, and he gores them and destroys them in a stroke. So again, Yosef had this chus for this, that through the gemilas chasadim and the tzedakah that he'd done. The zoicha lebinah ki Yisachar, and the person who does Torah and gemilas chasadim is zoicha to understanding of Torah, like Yisachar. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, mei Yisachar yodet binah le'itim, from the children of Yisachar, there were people who understood, who had understanding of the times, meaning in particular they were experts in Kiddush HaChodesh, Labdas Mayasi Yisrael, to know what the Jewish people should be able to do, meaning, in other words, so they were the ones who set the calendar so that everybody knows when the Yom Tovim are. Rashi brings it in this week's parasha. Maharsha says another point as well. It means they were also Keveya Itim La Torah, so that brought about, they caused many people to learn Torah and eventually to be able to do Maisim. Labdas Mayasi Yisrael, this way they're able to paskin and teach Torah to the Jewish people and teach them the actual mitzvahs and halachas, what to do. So therefore, so the second version is the person is zoicha to those brachas through gemilas chasadim and Torah. That's what Rashi says. Hainu kila. That was the honor that they were showing him. So we're saying that Yosef is going to be zoicha to that kind of honor. And Marsha says it also means from one of those women was Osnas, who ended up marrying and had children, and all of Yosef's descendants come through her. So yeah. Okay. Next. So this is it's a very suitable conclusion to the first parak, having talked about all the various kinds of damages that a shur and a chamor can do. Now we have, on the other hand, the good things that they can bring about. Okay. Ketzer regel parak sheni. So the second parak starts by talking about dinim involving where an animal causes damage with regel by stepping on things, by trampling things, or whatever, and you have all the various detailed dinim of that. Eventually, the Gemara gets into a discussion. So it eventually gets into a discussion about various angles about whether the animal does it in Rosh Hashanah Yochid, in Rosh Hashanah Abim. What happens if it's walking in Rosh Hashanah Abim and kicks pebbles that land in Rosh Hashanah Yochid, etc., etc. So eventually the Gemara digresses from that to talking about a concept called Zen Nen of Zeloi Choser. When you have where one person stands to gain from something and the other person is not losing out. So the classic example the Gemara brings is, suppose that Reuven owns a courtyard, and the yard and the buildings in it, he's not planning to rent out. He's just leaving them empty. If somebody else comes and lives in that property, then he doesn't have to pay Reuven rent. Because that would be an example of Zen Nen, as the Gemara explains. This would be an example of Zen Nen of Zelei Choser. Shimon is gaining by living over there. Reuven is not losing because he wasn't planning to rent out the place anyway. So the Gemara goes into details about it. It would have to be that Shimon doesn't damage the place even in the slightest. Not even, for example, that the walls become blackened with soot from him using it, etc., etc. It's a whole complex sugya over there. Anyway, in this connection, the Gemara brings Amar of Schoira, Amar of Huna, Amar Rav, Hadur b'chatsar chaveira, shalemi daitoi. If somebody lives in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge, ein sorech lahalas loyschar, he does not need to pay him rent. And not just because Zenen was Zalei Choser, but on top of that, he's actually benefiting the other guy in a way. Mishum shenemar, because the pasuk says, ushi'iya yukas shohar. The pasuk says, she'iya, which Rashi says two explanations. One is that she'iya is the name of a shed, and the other explanation is that she'iya means emptiness. Yukas breaks down, destroys, sh'ar, the gate. Meaning, in other words, Rashi's first explanation is that when a house is empty, a shed named She'ia hangs out over there and breaks down the gates. So therefore, so now when a person is living over there, it benefits because now he's keeping that shed out. Rashi's second explanation is that, practically speaking, it means that an abandoned house tends to fall apart. So the Gemara is attributing it to Shadim. Fine, you could explain it in a more rationalistic way. That just means things after a while fall apart and nobody is there to watch it. But whatever the case, the point is that Rashi's second explanation, Ushi'iya, when a house is empty, Yukas Shar, then Mazikim break down the gates. Now why do we mention the gate? Marsha refers to a Gemara in Sota that says when a house is destroyed, it starts from the entrance, from the doorway. That's the part that tends to fall apart first. Also, Marsha says it can also mean the shed attacks the house so that you have a place which was closed up like a wall, now all of a sudden becomes like a gate opened up. So therefore, in other words, the point is that the person living over there actually benefits because he prevents that destruction from taking place. Omer Ma'abar Avashi, and Ma'abar Avashi actually says in this connection, I personally saw a house like that was abandoned and that Shadim were in it, Umangah Ketorah, and it looked like an ox had been goring and then banging into the place because it was falling apart and so destroyed. So therefore, in other words, bearing out this point that when a house is abandoned and these kinds of things happen, so therefore here, the person who's living over there is actually doing the owner a favor in a way by preventing that from happening. Well, you have, you know, like this, you have all the time things in a house go wrong, and when you're living there, you tend to take care of small things before they become big things. Here you have, you know, there's a, it's now Sukkot time, you know, many Kehillos, they read Megillas Kehillos during Sukkot. You have a pasuk in Kehillos that expresses this idea. With laziness, the roof being sag. Over shiftless yadayim and with indolence of hands, the person just sets his hands and then just leaves his hands unworking. Yidloy faboyis, the house leaks. So in other words, Parshat, when you live in a house, you notice the beams are starting to sag. Let's go fix them. There's a leak over here. Let's go take care of it. Nobody's living there. You don't notice these things, and over time they get bigger and bigger, and then the whole thing collapses. Next. The Gemara then goes into a discussion about further on in the parak, it starts talking about the av nezikin of eish, of fire. So the Gemara brings in this connection a discussion about ishay mishum chitzav or ishay mishum mamoinon. When we say a person is responsible, or he lit a fire on his property and it spread to somebody else's property and damaged it. What is the halachic theory behind which we're mechayev in? Is it we say isha mishum chitza? Is it we say that the fire is considered as if he, like, imagine he was standing on his property and shooting arrows into the other guy's property? He wouldn't say, well, the arrows just fell there on their own. Of course not. You're shooting them. You're responsible. So the same way you set a fire in your property, then you're responsible for the fact that it spread. The other way of looking at it is isha mishum mamoinai. The other thing is, the same way as you have a responsibility to keep your ox from damaging or other animals, and you have a responsibility to keep your any other things that belong to you from causing damage, the same way the fire belongs to you and you have a responsibility to keep it from causing damage. And the Gemara talks about nafkaminas between them and so on and so forth. So now the Gemara brings in the following Mishnah from later on in the Masechta. Toshma, the Gemara says, Gomel Ton Pishton. Suppose that you have a camel loaded up with bundles of flax. For over Rishus Rabim, and the camel with flax on it is walking in Rishus Rabim, Nifnas Apishtoni Lasecha Chanus, and the flax, it's so large that it ends up sticking into the doorway of a shop, of a store, as he's walking by. The dofe v'neira shochemini, and the flax catches fire from a candle that the storekeeper has inside to give himself light to be able to do his business. The hidlikas habira, and the result is everything got set on fire and the whole building burnt down. Baal gomo chayab, then the owner of the camel is chayab because he shouldn't have overloaded his camel with flax so much that it goes and sticks into people's doorways. On the other hand, he niyach chenveni neder b'machutz. On the other hand, if the storekeeper put his candle outside, what's he doing with it outside? It belongs inside. So then chenveni chayab, then the storekeeper is going to be responsible for the damage because he put the candle where it shouldn't have been. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'ner Chanukah Potter, Rabbi Yehuda says, if it was a Chanukah lamp, a menorah, then he's Potter, because he has a mitzvah, Pirsumei Nisa, to keep it outside. So therefore, he's putting it b'rishus, and therefore, we shouldn't be responsible for what happened over here. The Chachamim counter, the Gemara answers, the Gemara explains, the Chachamim counter, fine, by all means, put it outside, Pirsumei Nisa, but then sit there and watch it, so that such accidents don't happen. So this doesn't happen, but you still have no business putting your candle out there without watching it. So Boina at the bottom of the page over here, it says basically, you know, the lesson from this is whoever started the trouble is the one who's responsible. In the first case, the camel driver is the one who started all the trouble by allowing his flax to stick into the other guy's store. In the second case, the storekeeper is the one who's responsible because he left his candle outside. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, when it's a Ner Chanukah, then at least it's Mechavan L'Dvar Mitzvah, and then we can't hold him responsible for what goes wrong because of that. There's a Rishimus where the Rebbe talks about a deeper idea behind it. The camel that Rebbe explains, where the camel is one of those animals that has one simantara, right? It has partially split hooves, chews its cud, and it has partially but not completely split hooves. So it's not kosher. So therefore, that represents the neshama with the goof. It's like a hybrid, like the way a gomel is, so to speak, a hybrid. It's carrying flax. Now, flax, once it's beaten and once it's processed and whatever, will become linen, which you can use for clothing and for other things like that. But right now, it's just raw flax. So it represents the unrefined gashmias of the world. So a person is carrying a load of that in Rishus Rabin, and If he now allows that to stick into the store, then that's a problem. I mean, he's allowing the gashmius to invade where it doesn't belong. Now, therefore, he's going to be the one responsible if things go wrong. On the other hand, if the storekeeper puts his candle outside, then that means, in other words, so now he's the one doing something wrong. You have to allow. The fact is, there has to be room for gashmius in the world. You have no business putting a candle over there and trying to burn up all that flax. That everybody is in this connection. You have at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Rashi brings from a Medrash over there that Yaakov is saying, how can we ever defeat Esav with all of those alufim and everything at the end of Parshas Vayishvach? And Hashem tells that the Medrash strikes up a moshel like a blacksmith who sees a person carrying a huge bundle of flax, and where's all that flax going to go? And a chacham tells him, all you need, you're a blacksmith, one little spark from your anvil and all of that pishtun will go up in flames. So fine, by all means, Yaakov should be getting rid of all of the unrefined gashmius of Esav, but with a spark, not with an entire candle. So therefore, we can hold him responsible that he's trying to go too far in destroying the world at large. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda argues, in other words, basically in that case, what he's doing is rotzeh without shoyv. And that's a problem, and therefore we hold him responsible for the consequences. You need rotzeh, but you also need shoyv. You need to be able to work with the world rather than just burning and destroying all of it. Rabbi Yehuda counters and says, if it's a ner Hanukkah, you know what? Think of what happened in the story of Hanukkah. People are going on the Siddur Nefesh. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, by the same token, in a ner Hanukkah, if then a person goes a little too far and he has rotzeh without shoyv, okay, you can't hold him responsible. Listen, you know, they're going to save Yiddishkeit. You got to give him a break if they go a little too far. Nevertheless, the Chacham answer, that's fine, but nevertheless, Yoshev and Meshamer, as much as you're going on Mesidus Nefesh, as much as you're going to save the Jewish people and to save Yiddishkeit, you still have to guard that it doesn't go and destroy the whole world at large. Aminiach Perach Shlishi, so the third parak begins by talking about cases where a person leaves barrels in Rosh Hasharabim and somebody else trips over them, and it talks about a variety of cases where a person has something where a person leaves something that fallen in Rosh Hasharabim or whatever, and it causes somebody to trip or to get injured or whatever. It's a tolda bur. So therefore he's chayev, just like he's chayev for a bur that he digs. So eventually it talks about a case where, for example, a person, let's say, has shards of glass, and he puts them inside a wall, and then eventually the wall collapses, and somebody gets injured by the shards of glass, and he's going to be chayev, depending on the circumstances, exactly, depending whether was this a wall that was likely to be torn down soon, was it a wall that was likely to stand there for 100 years, whatever. The Gemara goes into details about it. So now the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Hasidim Rishonim, the Uli Hasidim, would go, as a chassid always goes, l'fnim Meshur Hasadim, so they would take the extra step to avoid that nothing of theirs should cause hezek to somebody else. They, if they had thorns or they had shards of glass, they would bury them inside their fields, or Mamikimlam Sholosh Tvachim, they would dig a depth of at least 3 Tvachim, and put them in there, because you don't want them to interrupt the plow. And the plow typically only goes up to 3 tefachim deep into the soil. We find various places in Shas where that was the normal depth that a person would plow to. So the point is, in other words, if they did less than 3 tefachim, the next time they plow the field, it'll bring right up the shards and we're back to square one. Somebody else could be injured by it. Therefore, they would bury them at least 3 tefachim deep in order to avoid that problem. It's their property, but the point is, in other words, they wouldn't just put it, let's say, in a wall, even though we're saying in a wall it could stay there for decades. They wanted to make sure as much as possible that it would never be brought up. So if they do it deep enough that it's below the depth of the plow, then it will never come up. You have famously, for example, we talk about when it comes to cutting nails, that has a chosid surf on, and then Tosfos explains, and it's brought in a variety of places in the Siddur, that the idea is even though burning parts that came from one's own body is harmful to him, nevertheless, he'd rather take the chance of harming himself, he'd rather definitely do something that will harm him rather than even take the chance of harming somebody else by throwing them out, and a pregnant woman will step on them. So the same idea over here, they would bury their glass shards and their thorns deep enough that the derech hateva, it's not going to possibly come up again. So the Gemara gives other examples. Rav Sheshes shodi lehu benura. Rav Sheshes would throw these kinds of things into a fire. The pashtos, a fire is not a regular fire, it's not going to burn glass. The pashtos, we're talking about a hot enough fire that it would. Rava Shabilahu Badiglas, Rava would throw them into the Chidekel River, which is deep enough where they'd sink to the bottom and nobody's ever going to find them again. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar Rav Yehuda, if a person really wants to be a chassid and go lefnim mishur sadin, likayim milidin nizikin, he should fulfill things of nizikin. So it includes it includes this kind of thing that we're talking about over here, various other things. There's a question whether nizikin in this connection means dafka, the three mesechtas, the three babas, which were originally one big mesechta called nizikin, or whether it means more generally the whole seder nizikin. There are, by the way, mefoshin. I think the Rashba explains that we mean specifically things like this, where we're saying that a chosid does such and such. But other mefoshin explain that it means more generally, a chosid will be careful with any kind of nizikin to go to the Mishra Sadin and to act in a way that it's not that it can't possibly cause a hezik to somebody else. So go the extra mile, even in cases throughout the Masechti, and various things that a person is not obligated to do, but a chosid will go to the Mishra Sadin to make sure that there's no chance of his things causing a hezek. Rava Amar Mila De'Avis. Rava says another thing, a person wants to be a chassid, he should be fulfilling the matters of Avis. Here also, you have the Rashba explains it means certain specific things that it says in Pirkei Avos, Horilach Va'Oisa Chassid, and Shalish Shalach, Shalach Shalach Chassid, and so on and so forth, the various things that it says specifically that a Chassid does. Famously, we know that Rebbe explained it means the whole Masechta Avos is Mili de Chassidusa, and there's many, many Sichas, of course, you have the entire Sfarim that have been put together with it, where the Rebbe would explain how even things in Avos that seem to be straight up Halacha, like Hevi Zor B'Kriya Shema B'Tfila, or Al Tav Al Asu Modus or other things like that. It seems to be just straight up black letter halacha, or there's nevertheless a mili de chassidus in it. Anyway, the amilam mili de brachas, others say that another thing, a person wants to be a chassid, he should be careful with matters of brachas. So why do we have these three things? Marsha explains, a chassid is someone who does things in the best possible way. So now, in Chassidus, in fact, you have the Braisa, the famous Braisa of Rav Pinchas ben Yoreh, which is at the end of Soita and Avodah Zarah, and in a couple of other places, the famous Musa Sefer Mesilas Yesharim is based on that Braisa. Zehirus Mivir de Zrizus, Zrizus Mivir de Nekios, the various levels that a person has to climb in Avodah. And Chassidus is one of the highest levels over there. So Chassid is not Sam a title, it's a very exalted title. So now you have, Marsha explains, you have this Toivo Shamayim, this being good in the things between you, Ben Adam Lamakim, you have Ben Adam Lachavele, Toivo Labrius, and then you have things that a person is good for himself. So these three things reflect these three things. Milidin is Zikin is Toivo Labrius. Mili de Avos is going to be, is going to be good for himself. He's going to perfect his own midas. And Mili de Brachas is Toiv LaShamayim. So all three are true, but each one of them is referring to a different aspect of a person's life. And there are various other points that are made about it. Also, why dafka these three? Another point is that each of them is doing things on behalf of other people. Nizikin, you're going the extra mile to make sure that you're property doesn't damage somebody else. Milid brachas is, after all, what's the point? The point of saying a bracha before and after food. The Gemara explains. Otherwise, it's like goizel mekneses Yisrael. It's like he's stealing from the Edishan, from Knesset Yisrael. So here, when a person is careful about brachas, means he wants to go the extra mile to not be stealing from the rest of the Jewish people. And milid avos is also, as most of avos, is things may not amachaveroi. So therefore, so you have all those three things as well. There's places in Maimonides where it talks about that the idea of being careful with mili de brachas also means that a person is careful to do things in a way that we know that baruch, we know throughout in many places in Chassidus we talk about that baruch after Hashem means that miloshen havracha, we're bringing down elokus into the world. Well then, being careful with mili de brachas means going the extra mile to do all he can to bring elokus down into the world. And that's really what a chassid is. So throughout Sukkot, we find there's a tremendous, a lot of stress placed on the matter of Simcha. You have Simcha of every Yom Tov, and Chagas Sukkot especially is called Zman Simchasenu, and you have Simchas Beis HaSheva, or Shabbos Mayim Misasen, Mimayin HaYeshua, and the special Simcha of Simchas Beis HaSheva, that anybody who didn't see it, like Ross Simcha Miyamov, and nowadays we do the Simchas Beis HaSheva. In fact, in some ways we started even on the first night of Yom Tov, which the Rebbe talks about, that What do you mean? How, in a sikha that I've talked about, so in a number of sikhas, so how can a yid can say, what do you mean? We're in Golos. How are we supposed to be happy with Simchas Beis HaSheva? But the idea is, Ken Yuba, V'chein Yifreitz, that no, you show how even in Golos you're able to break through all the barriers and be happy by Simchas Beis HaSheva, and even in the street doesn't interfere with it, Adarav, the street itself dances with Simchas Beis HaSheva as well. Various times that I've also talked about the idea in a way we have an advantage now. It's not only in the Bis Mikdash, it's even in the street. It's not only the Chassidim Banshe Mais who dance, it's all of us. It's even on Yom Tov, whereas in the Bis Mikdash they only had it Chalamoyed, etc. some halachas of Sukkos. So you have to keep the sukkah b'kavod dik, because after all, it's a mitzvah, so therefore you don't bring into it kalim that are not honorable. So for example, you don't bring in their pots. Also, for example, once you've finished eating, then you have to take out the dirty dishes. You can't leave them in a sukkah. As far as bringing a garbage can into the sukkah, that I don't know, actually. Maybe what you do is you just bring in a garbage bag to put the garbage in there and then take it right out. So he even brings over here, if you do bring in kalim that are bozeri, then you wouldn't even say leishet v'sukkah until you take them out, although the Alter Rebbe does not mention that point in Shulchan Aruch, which may mean that he doesn't hold of it.